One of the good sisters told me today, be real careful not to fall off this ledge because I walk around so much. And I understand that. And let me just tell you, if I've got a story about a friend of mine, it's Mike Schmidt, who's a preacher. Mike had polio when he was little. And Mike is a great speaker, but he has this wood shoe on it because one leg shorter than the other. But Mike is a dynamic speaker, but he moves a lot, and he walks around, and he was preaching at a congregation that had a communion table and had wood floors, and Mike was down there, and he was talking, and they'd already had Lord's Supper, thankfully, but he knocked the communion tray right off, and on the floor, the deacons got up, and they cleaned it all up and put it back on the table. He went on, got to the invitation, he was really hammering it home, and he knocked them off again. And he said, just leave him, I'm almost done. But the problem is, Mike didn't stop walking. And he started to go around that communion table and started crunching those communion cups under his wood shoe. And he said, well, I think I've ruined this sermon. He said, so if I fall off, I'll try not to ruin the sermon. We'll just have a good laugh and see where we're going. You know, I appreciate so much all of you that have been here every night. I got to tell you something. I started out being a preacher and recognized I wasn't very good at it. My dad called and said, I need help in the business. You're not married. Your brother's a full-time preacher. He said, you can preach around here. There's a lot of little churches. Why don't you come back here and preach here and get into the insurance business? And so being the fact that I wasn't married, and I said, okay, I'll do that. And I'll preach at little congregations and help any way I can. But when I got into the insurance business, I knew very little about it. But I decided, you know, I needed to learn what it was really about. And unfortunately, the world has lost the concept of what insurance is about, very much like they've lost the concept of what religion is about. You know, everybody listens to TV, and they see on TV that insurance is about price. And I got to tell you something, insurance has nothing to do with price. And my customers that know me know that I don't care what they pay for insurance. Because the job of insurance is protecting your assets. In fact, I gave Pat a tube of my Titleist golf balls today. On that golf ball it says, Thomas and Grushon Insurance, we protect assets. That's all we do. And I really don't care how much you pay for it because you really get what you're paying for. And when you sell insurance, my concern is that if the loss happens, that no money comes out of your pocket. And I insure people that have done very well for themselves and they've got these assets. And my job is to make sure that if a loss takes place, that they don't lose anything. And I insure a very good company called Southtown Painting up in Dayton area, large painting contractor. And Ron and Dave, I've insured them for many years and done their commercial business. And I said, you know, guys, your business is such. I said, I want to look at your personal policies. I never insured their personal policies. And Ron said to me, he goes, well, you know, Jim, you really have done a good job on our commercial, but we have friends that do our personal insurance. I said, I didn't say I wanted to sell you your insurance. I said, I want to look at your insurance. Because I'll just tell you, Dave, they have a 401k, and both Ron and Dave have $1 million in that 401k, each one of them. They've got some assets. They got 26 automobiles in their company. And they do, I mean, it's a nice business. And so I said, I really don't care if I sell you insurance. I just want to make sure that you're protected properly. So about 6 months went by, and Ron calls me and said, hey, I got my policy from this other company, and I know you told me you want to look at it and everything, but I'm trying to get hold of my agent. He must be on vacation. Can you look at this policy for me? Because I got a question about it. And so I said, sure, Ron, fax it on over. I'll take a look at it for you. And he faxed it over to me, and I called him immediately. I said, Ron, does your wife happen to be out today running around? He said, well, yeah, she is. I said, can you tell her to stop whatever she's doing and park the car? He said, well, why? I said, well, Dave, would you say that your assets are above $300,000? He said, well, you know they are. And I said, you'd say your assets are above $1 million. He said, Jim, you know they are. I said, would you say your assets are above $2 million? He said, well, Jim, you know my assets are above $2 million. I said, yes, I do. And Ron, let me tell you something. If your wife's in a car accident today and she injures somebody, your policy is going to pay exactly $100 to that person she injures or kills. He said, what? I said, it's going to pay $100,000. He says, well, if she kills somebody, where's the rest of it coming from? I said, have you ever heard of Dyer, Garofalo, Mann, and Schultz? They're the attorneys. And they're going to come, and they're going to come out of your account. It's going to come out of your 401k. It's going to come out of your business. It's going to come out. He said, are you kidding me? I said, how long have you known this guy? He says, 20-some years. He says, does he know you own Southtown Paint? He says, well, certainly he does. Well, I said, well, I want to tell you, he knows you so well that he's protected you for $100,000. So if you have that accident, you're going to lose your business. You're going to lose your 401k. You're going to lose everything. And he said, Jim, I'm faxing you everything over right now. I want insurance by the end of the day. I said, that's fine, but you call your wife and tell her not to move the car. And what has happened in the insurance business, people have stopped thinking about what coverage is about. And they started thinking about how much insurance do I pay? I've been in the insurance business 40 years. I've been with people that have been in car accidents where they've killed somebody. I've been with people as their house burnt. I've been with people that have, where a husband has died prematurely and had life insurance, and his wife didn't know how she was going to make it, but I'm delivering a check that's going to help her make it. Because I was taught that the products were designed to do something and that insurance was about protection, not about cost. So that's the way I run my business. Now let me tell you the other side of that. I am the owner of Thomas and Grushon Insurance, and Mr. Thomas was a wonderful man. Him and his wife never had children. We were like his children. September 1st in the year 1982, I'm working in my office and I get a telephone call from my brother. He said, Jim, you need to come home. I said, what's wrong? He said, Charles died. I go, Charles who? He said, Mr. Thomas. I was in the Xenia office. Mr. Thomas worked in the Bellbrook office. And during the night, at age 58, Mr. Thomas had an aortic aneurysm and died right there on the spot. I was just shook up. His wife was 50 years old. So we had to take over and do some things. But the one thing that I found out is this man that had been insuring everybody's life died without life insurance. Do you believe that? He had a wife, a business, he had debts, he had all that stuff, and he didn't buy a policy on himself. Now, I just got to tell you something. We can sell Christianity all we want, but one of the biggest problems we have is we have to learn to overcome the challenge of ourselves and apply the things that are in here. I tell you, I struggled for the first 33 years of my life. I finally sat down one day and I looked at myself, and I had been teaching and preaching and everything. I said, why do you believe this? And you know the first lesson I had about the self-examination? Do you believe this? Is this true or is it not? Or is this just something that you've believed all your life because your parents told you that? And so I had to sit down. And I had to look at myself and see, what do you really believe? And I recognized everything that my parents had taught me. And I had the same thing that everybody else. Well, my parents wouldn't intentionally teach me something wrong. But I had to sit down and say, what do you believe? And not only what do you believe, if you really believe it, are you going to live it? And that's a struggle. Because if you're going to live it, you're going to have to look at yourself honestly, and you're going to have to say, this is what's right with me, and this is what's wrong with me, and these are the things that I need to change. Now, I just got to tell you something. Most of us don't sit down and write things down about what's wrong with me. We don't sit there and contemplate what's wrong with me. What things am I that I need to change? What things do I need to do to be the person that God wants me to be? And we don't focus on that. And the reason we don't focus on it, because honestly, we like what we are. Because if you didn't like what you were, unless you were addicted to it, you would change it. And one thing I think is really important is we have this attitude towards self. And let me tell you, it's okay. How should we feel about ourselves? How should you feel about yourself? You know, so I got to tell you something. Every one of us should love ourselves. The Bible teaches you to love you. If you don't believe it, just turn over to Matthew, the 22nd chapter. Because Jesus there being questioned by the Sadducees, they ask him, what is the greatest command of all? And Jesus says, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. And then he says the second thing, which we don't hear. But he says, you love your neighbor. Oh, we hear that. But listen what he says. You love your neighbor as you love who? Yourself. God didn't condemn you for loving yourself. He tells you to love yourself. Over in Ephesians chapter 5, he tells husbands, love your wives as you love your own body. For no man hates his own flesh, but he nourishes and cherishes it. God tells you to love you. There's nothing wrong with loving you. It's important that you love you. But there's a balance that we have to work on. And the balance is understanding the difference between loving ourselves and the idea that we have a problem that we love ourselves too much. In Romans chapter 12, we all remember verse 1 and 2, present ourselves living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is our reasonable service to worship. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you might prove what is good and acceptable in the perfect will of God. But how many of you think about verse 3? Because verse 3 says, do not think more highly of yourself than you ought. Whoa. So if I'm going to be the living sacrifice, I have to not be conformed to the world, but I have to be transformed into the renewing of our mind. I got to become like my Savior. I got to do what is good and acceptable in the perfect will of the Lord. And I be not conformed, but transformed. And that I become a living sacrifice. And in verse 3 it says, I'll tell each one of you, don't think more of yourself than you ought. Now I got to tell you something. There's nothing wrong with loving yourself. But for most of us, it gets out of control. We love ourselves way too much. You know, one of my favorite songs, my wife said that because I'm a joker and facetious, oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror. I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. I must be a whale of a man. Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best I can. You know, I know he's being facetious when he makes that song. But the fact is, we can make our life be about ourselves. And there has to be that balance between loving yourself and having humility and walking with humility before God. And the idea of understanding who God is and who you are. The question I would ask you, if you truly have faith, what is the difference between you and God? Do you recognize, as Paul did, where he is in relationship to God? Every man of faith had this awe in this understanding of God so that he wanted to serve God. And we have to be people that are that way. You know, it's interesting. It tells us if we think we're something when we are nothing, we deceive ourselves. Well, what happens when self takes control? What happens when self takes control? We think more highly in ourselves, and we think ourselves something when we're nothing. We become proud, we become uplifted, we become boastful, we become arrogant, and we focus life around us. Now, I just got to tell you, when you read the book of Job, Job had a balance to life. When you read the book of Ecclesiastes, I believe Ecclesiastes is written at the end of Solomon's life. But Solomon looked at what life meant to him. He said, I was looking for ways to have fulfillment. I got myself men servants, women servants. I got myself singers. I got this, I got that, I got that. And he said, everything I tried to get for me never made me happy. And everything was just vanity and vexation of the spirit. Man strives to be happy. But the Bible teaches that for us to be happy is a temporary thing. and that we need to focus less on selves and more upon how we serve others and how we serve God. James makes the statement that we are our biggest enemy, because James says, let no man say when I am tempted, I am tempted by God. Because God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempts he any man. That's what James says. Now look what James says. But man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Their self. Why do I have problem with life? Why do I have struggles in life? Because myself gets in the way. I'm drawn away from my own lust. I am enticed. Flip Wilson, I don't know, most of you don't even remember Flip Wilson, but he was a comedian back in the 70s. And he had a famous thing, the devil made me do it. The devil made me do it. The devil doesn't make, devil makes you do nothing. Fact is, evil's in the world, and Satan will tempt you any way he can. But you know what it says? A man is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. So any sin problem you have has one source of the sin problem. And the source of the sin problem in our life, the source of the sin problem in my life, the struggles I've had in my life with sin, you know where the root of that is? It's me. I'm the source of my problem. Because my will, what I want, I exalt myself above God. I put God down here. I put Jim Gruchon up here. And every sin problem I've ever had in my life, it's because I made myself God. I lowered God and I made me God. And folks, sometimes we don't even recognize we're doing it. Let me just tell you something. Man never makes the wrong choice for somebody else. I want you to think about it. When we choose to sin, it's to benefit me. It's not to benefit somebody else. I don't care whether it's self-will, whether it's pride, whether it's arrogance, the way you treat somebody. You know, I got to tell you, I struggle with this issue of me so badly. And husbands, just think about it. Just think about it. The problems we have with our wives, let's be honest. Men are basically boneheads. The fact is, God gave you responsibility to be head of the family. But he says in that you submit yourselves to the one another in the fear of the Lord. Now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. How many of you men are submitting yourselves to your wives? I'm not going to do that. Why not? You ought to love your wife as your own flesh. You ought to submit yourselves to one another in the fear of the Lord. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. The headship of a husband is best seen when the husband leads by example. Don't tell my wife to be sacrificial while I'm ordering around and expecting things out of her that I don't expect out of myself. Men, we got to fight this thing about being selfish because we think God gave us some privilege. I'll tell you what the privilege that God gave us. God gave us the privilege to have the most wonderful thing of his creation standing by our side. That's the privilege we have. When you look at your wife, that's the greatest thing that God ever gave to us to live in this world. And the question is, when we don't treat them that way, why? We get in our own ways because of our selfishness. Man's sin and his selfishness, he struggles so much because he thinks about me, he thinks about myself. You know, Toby Keith, if you guys listen to country music like I do, he has a song, I want to talk about me, I want to talk about I want to talk about number one. You know, everybody laughs at that. But that's a problem we have. Getting myself out of the way. You know, I've visited a lot of people that have struggled in the Lord and fallen away and stopped going to church, stopped doing what they needed to do. I can tell you seriously, over 90% of that is about them. You want to see somebody that won't be a Christian very long and won't be a faithful Christian very long? Just let life be about them. About how the ways people treat them, the way people act toward them, what people do for them, what them. When we focus on self, on I, on my, on me, we forget that God put us here to represent Him to the world. We are to let our light so shine before men that they see our good works, that they glorify not us, but they glorify our Father which is in heaven. Our work as Christians has nothing to do with somebody grabbing a hold of Jim and saying, you're a wonderful person. You're just a great teacher. It's about glorifying God. And our lives need to be not about what we want, what we have, what we think we deserve, but what God needs of us so that we can serve Him. There's people lost out in this world. And God needs us to be selfless enough to say, I don't care if men love me or hate me. I'm going to represent God to the world. I'm going to speak up and I'm going to try to convert the lost. I'm going to try to talk to them about what is right. You know, I talked about Luke chapter 12 the other night. And it's important. Because God gives man the right to make any decision he wants. But don't think that we're going to make these decisions without consequences being with them. And when you go to Luke 12 and it starts out, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me. And Jesus gives the parable and he says, a man's life consists not in the abundance of things he possesses. Then he goes down there and he says, he talks about this guy that has all these goods and everything. He says, well, I don't have room to bestow my goods. Well, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns. I'll build greater. And there I will store all my goods. And I'll take my ease. And I'll eat, drink, and be merry. 13 or 14 times the personal pronoun I or my is used in that. I hear brethren talking about their 401ks, their investments, and everything else. And you know, I'll have a brother at church, and it's happened a couple times. He said, hey, I got a great offer from AEG. I said, what's AEG? He says, it's an electric company. You could save so much a kilowatt hour. What's a kilowatt? Well, I tell you what, they reduced my rates by this much. Yeah? He says, I saved this much. Well, that's good. That's good. Good stewardship. You know, I got this much in my 401k. When I reach this much, I'm going to retire. I hear it a lot. I hear it from Christians talking about it. You know, I got to tell you something. Everything you have, God gives you, but He doesn't give you to consume it upon your own lust. James chapter 4, he says, you adulterers and adulteresses of the world, don't you know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? You ask and you do not receive. Why? You ask so you can have it to yourself, consume it yourself. Do you look at the things that you have as being for you? Or are they for the glorification of God? That's why, you know, people, when we're taught to give as we've been prospered, not grudgingly or out of necessity, but cheerfully. You know, it's kind of interesting. When I was preaching in Portsmouth, I had this guy tell me a story about a man that was there passing the offering plate. And he's a pretty well-off guy. And the guy, he pulls out his wallet and he takes a dollar bill and he puts it in the offering plate. And the guy stood there and said, you need to take that back. He said, you're not giving as you prospered. The guy looks at me, pulls it back, and he grabs a 20 out of his wallet and he flips it down. And he said, no, you need to take that back. You're giving begrudgingly and out of necessity. It's all about you. Begrudgingly and out of necessity. And the guy pulls $100 out of his wallet and he smiles real big and he puts it in the collection plate. He says, the Lord loves a cheerful giver. You know, the fact is, when we give, what are we thinking about? Are we thinking about how much it costs me or how much God has blessed me to give to Him? You know, I went and talked to a brother one time that was struggling, and he was making a bunch of money. And he was struggling, wasn't giving much to the Lord. And I sat down with him, and I said, listen, I said, I know you want to grow as a Christian, but you need to make the Lord a priority of your life. And I said, you give a check every week. And he said, yeah, I do. I give every week. I said, but you give $10. He said, yeah. And I said, well, I want to read a passage with you. And I read the passage, 1 Corinthians 16. Then I went over to 2 Corinthians and talked about giving. And I said, you need to give as you've been prospered. And I said, do you know the Old Testament? And he was a young Christian. I said, do you know the Old Testament and what they were asked to give in the Old Testament? He said, you know, I think they were to tithe. He said, but I don't know exactly what tithing was. And I said, well, tithing was they gave a tenth of everything that they had. And not only did they give the tenth of everything they had, if they were farmers and they did crops, they had to leave the corners of their fields so the poor could glean from that. And that was God's. That belonged to God. And I said, when you give, you need to be thinking about what God has given you. Because what we're doing here, we use this money to preach the gospel, take care of the needy and everything else. And you need to be thinking about it. He goes, well, wait a minute. He goes, I give all I can give. He said, I have to make payment on my house, on my boat, on my RV, on my truck. He went down the list and says, that's all I have left. Folks, God doesn't want your leftovers. Now, I tell you, I've eaten some good stuff, and I'll take your leftovers. I've eaten some good stuff while I'm here. But I want you to know something about God. God wouldn't accept leftovers from the children of Israel, and he took that qualification of 10% off us, didn't he? He took that tithing away. No, he made it a lot harder. He says, you give as you've been prospered. That's harder, isn't it? Because you got to look at God and you got to say, God, you've given me this. It's yours. It belongs to you. And everything I have is yours. But you know, sometimes self gets in the way because we want that new toy. You know, I love my son Wes, but I got to tell you something. Every time the new iPhone comes out, now he doesn't stand in line because I'd smack him if he did. But he gets it within a couple weeks. He loves those electronic gadgets. I told Pam that when he was growing up, he needed to be in the shoe sales business because he'd be his best customer. He went to work at one of the Foot Locker or something like that. And I got to tell you something. There's not a woman in this congregation that had more shoes than my 17-year-old son. He loves shoes. I was talking to Wes. I said, how much do you think your shoe collection is in there? He said, well, I've got this. I got 14 pairs of shoes. I said, and I got to talk to you about something. You're buying a truck. I co-signed for it, but I said, you miss a payment, and Dad sells the truck. You're buying a truck, got 14 pairs of shoes, and you sit behind me. But I intentionally got up the other week to stand in the back of the building. And Wesley didn't put anything in the collection. He says, am I supposed to do that? He was 17 years old. Am I supposed to do that? Parents, I want to tell you a good habit right now. You teach your children that giving is a great blessing. When we talk about it's more blessed to give and receive, do you really feel that way or is it about me? And you teach your children how great it is. I don't care if you're the teaching, as you take them down to the soup kitchen, you have them work for Saturday, and you watch the poor people go through the line, and all they're doing is dipping out soup. If that's what they need to do to learn how to give, that's what they need to learn how to give. I don't care what kind of project they need to do, but you need to teach your children to do projects for other people. You need to get them to think about other people, because we weren't here, brought here by God to be served. We were brought here by God to serve others. And our life is about taking care of God's work here. And I tell you, if that's not your mind, that's because self has got you right where it wants you. You know, the Bible teaches that we all have choice, and God gives man the right to make the choices that he wants to make in life. And you have the right to choose. Turn over to Romans, the sixth chapter, if you would. In Romans, the sixth chapter, Paul starts out that chapter. And there was a big discussion going on. And the discussion in the Romans, with Roman Christians, is we've got God's grace now. God's grace covers our sin. So we can go ahead and the more we sin, the more we have God's grace. And Paul tells him that's just not the case. But look what he says in verse 12. He says, therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world and death by sin, and so death spread to all men because all sin. All of us sin and fall short of the glory of God. But we're told, do not let sin reign in our mortal bodies. You are in control of it. You're the one that makes a choice whether you're going to sin or not. You're the one that makes a choice at what websites you look at, what TV you look at, what movies you will go to, what kind of music you will listen to, what kind of things you'll talk about. You're the one that makes that choice. And when you make the choice, it's nothing but about you. I golf with some interesting characters. One of my best golfing buddies was an alcoholic for years. Lost two wives and a couple businesses, drinking. He's one of the nicest men I ever met. He's been sober for about 7 years. And I asked him, how did that happen? He said, well, I woke up one morning on the bar at Sugar Valley Country Club, didn't know how I got there. And he said, I was laying there on the bar and I was thinking, Red, you've messed up two marriages, you've messed up businesses, you've messed up your kids, all because you won't stop doing this. He walked into an AA meeting that night. He was a three-pack-a-day smoker. He threw away his cigarettes and he never took a drink again. It took the destruction of his life to understand that his life wasn't about him. What's it going to take for us to recognize that our lives are not about us? It's a hard thing to look at yourself and say, I need to stop. Because God's going to let you choose what you want to do. God's not going to come down. And he's not going to make you be something. God did not make you a robot. He gave you free will and he lets you choose what you're going to serve. And when Joshua told the children of Israel in Joshua 24, you can decide whether you want to serve the gods on the other side of the river. You can decide what you want to do. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He made a decision. And folks, we got to make a decision about the world we're around, whether we're going to let it serve us or whether we're going to serve God. And sometimes the reason our Christianity is so weak is because we can't get out of our own way. It's me, it's I, it's what I want. It's what makes me feel good. I think it's interesting in that same chapter, in Romans chapter 6. Look what Paul says in verse 16. In chapter 6. He says, verse 16, he says, do you not know that when you present yourselves to someone as a slave for obedience, you are a slave of whom you obey, either of sin resulting in death or obedience resulting in righteousness? But you know who presents themselves? You present yourself to those things. You decide whether I'm going to do what's right or I'm going to do what's wrong. It's all about your choice. I have heard so many people blame so many people about their situations when it's all a situation of self. You're not going to heaven because of what brother so-and-so did. You're not going to hell because of what brother so-and-so did. There is nothing that Lynn Wessel can do to me to send me to hell. Lynn's going to answer to God for what he does. But he has no power over my choices to make me do something I shouldn't. Brother Collier doesn't have any power over me to make me change. I have no power over you. The fact is, if we lose our souls, it's because we have chosen to let our life be more important than serving God. I've got 50 more minutes, and I've got to get it done in 4. But let me tell you, I'm going to skip over the last page, because the greatest challenge of self is giving yourself away. And I think one of the things that we all understand. Fathers, when that little girl grows up, And she tells you that she wants to marry that young man. And you stand at the back of that building on that day, and you put her arm in your arm. You're giving her away. She'll always be your little girl in your heart. And it's hard to let that go. You don't have choices about that. In so many ways, we don't have choices. But I got to tell you, we have choices about what we're going to let in our lives. Turn over to Philippians chapter 3. In Philippians chapter 3, starting with verse 4, the Apostle Paul wrote this: although I myself might have confidence, even in the flesh, if anyone else has a mind to put confidence in the flesh, I far more. I was circumcised the eighth day, of the nation of Israel, the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as touching the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, and persecuted the church, as to the righteousness which is in the law, I was found blameless. But whatever things were gained to me, those things I count as loss for the sake of Christ. Moreover, than that, I count all things to be a loss in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I've suffered the loss of all things, and I count them but rubbish, in order that I might gain him. I want to know what has value in your life. What's important to you? I'm sure Paul could have stood with the Pharisees and he could have boasted himself up. I was taught by Gamaliel. I was a Hebrew of Hebrews. I was really advancing in the brothers. I was thought of as this big man. He could have ignored what happened on the road to Damascus. I mean, after all, look back in the book of John. Look when Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead. They rolled the stone away and Lazarus was stinking. And he says, Lazarus, come forth. And this dead man walks out of the grave. People ran back in and told the Pharisees, Lazarus was dead. Jesus raised him from the dead. You know what the Pharisee says? What are we going to do about this man? How are we going to kill him? That was their will. Paul could have said the same thing. I don't care who showed himself to me on the road to Damascus. I'm a bigwig in the Pharisees. I'm thought highly of by this nation. And Paul said, everything I thought was important means nothing. And I count it but rubbish so that I can have Christ. What's the value of Jesus Christ to you? Is it worth putting yourself away? In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, if you turn over there, these are verses I have marked in my Bible because I think they're such important verses. All verses are important in the Bible, but they have special meaning to me. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 14 says, for the love of Christ controls us. Some of your versions say constrains me. The love of Christ constrains us. Having concluded this, that one died for all, therefore all died. And he died for all, that they who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died and arose again on their behalf. He said, the love of Christ controls me, it constrains me, it drives my life. I judge this, my Lord died for me, I'm dead for him. It's not about me anymore. You turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, here in this verse 5, and starting with verse 3, he says, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, and we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Paul said, my life is to bring everything under Jesus Christ. I'm taking every thought captive. It's no longer the weapons of warfare. It's no longer warring with men. It's giving my life to the Lord and warring for Him. And everything in my life's got to be captive to Jesus Christ. Are you willing to give Jesus Christ your entire life? Give Him everything that you have? The Apostle Paul of Galatians chapter 2, a verse you well know. The Apostle Paul says, it's no longer I who live, but it's Christ that lives in me. In the life I live in flesh, I live in faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. Is the life you're living in the flesh for the Son of God that died for you, that you might live forever? Going to heaven, God's done everything He can do to get you there. Going to heaven is not about how enticing the world is, because the world will always be enticing. Satan will always present a way that we can look at ourselves and say, give it to me. Going to heaven is about me surrendering myself to the will of God. It's for me loving my God enough to give my life back to Him. It's about me saying, this world is not my home. It's about me loving God more than I love myself. If you want to go to heaven, you're going to have to sacrifice. You're not going to have to sacrifice to live a little bit. You're going to have to sacrifice everything that has to do with you. Most of the people here do not know Gary Henry, and I mentioned this earlier probably. But Gary Henry was a faithful gospel preacher raising some children with his wife, and his wife left him for another man. Gary's trying to preach the gospel and raise his sons, and he was so tormented by what happened to him. Gary prayed to God, and he told God, God, I'll never let a physical relationship in my life ever get between me and you. God, help me through this. Help me raise my children. I will never marry. I'm devoting my life to you. He raised his children. He fell in love with a wonderful young Christian woman. He loved her dearly. He went to his knees one night and said, God, I want to go to heaven. I promised you, and I remember that promise. Gary went to her and said, I love you, but I can't marry you. I promised God I wouldn't. Do you love God that much that you would promise Him everything your life has? Every emotion, every will, so that I can live for Him and get rid of myself? If you ever get the opportunity to read Gary Henry's writings, there's a man that loves heaven more than he loves himself. How about you? Are you willing to give it up? Are you willing to surrender all so that you can be in heaven with God? Jesus said, come unto me, all ye that labor heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. You take my yoke upon you, and you learn of me. For I'm meek and lowly in heart, and you shall have rest unto your soul. For my yoke is easy, my burden is light. Jesus wants to bear every burden, every load, and God wants to take it all away from you. And that day when you get to heaven, all the pains of this world are past. And you're in the presence of God because you put Him first in your heart. Have you guarded your heart that way? If not, you can repent tonight and say, God, I am sorry that I haven't given you the place in my heart that you deserve. I'm going to give it to you the rest of my life. I'm going to let your Son live in me and through me. Day comes and you stand before God and He looks at you and He says, well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of the Lord. I'm looking forward to that day. How about you? If we can help you tonight, we ask you to come.